taking a step back from the US this week to talk south of the border. What is going on in Central and South America, and how does it reflect back to the States? Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us on iTunes, Wooshka, Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. Talking Central and South America this week, let's start at the border. Monthly arrests at the US-Mexico border have topped 100,000 for 2 months in a row. Record numbers in spite of Trump's rhetoric. They're still coming. What's going on, Ed?
Well, conditions in their countries have not improved. As a matter of fact, they deteriorated, particularly since Trump's reduce the aid going to those countries. So those countries are in bad shape. Their leadership is very poor. The gang lords are there. They're bigger and better than ever because they really have to compete now with the other drugs. They have to compete with the opiates. So these gang guys are more dangerous than they were before, and the U.S. isn't providing through the DEA and other things the kind of aid they used to. So this is a deep and really compelling problem. People are leaving not because they want to, they have to.
Homeland Security said last week, for the first time ever, the agency is running out of space to jail single adult migrants. And of course, we're well aware of the horrors around family and child detention. Was Trump right all along? Do we have a border emergency, or does the U.S. have a border emergency?
The U.S. has a border emergency, but that border emergency has nothing to do with walls. The border emergency has to do with the countries from which these people originate. They're not originating from Mexico. They're originating from farther south of the border. And Mexico has to help here. I agree with the president on that. But there is no policy. There's no program to provide assistance. For example, if the Yucatan, which is very big, had a place where people could go for security purposes and stay there while they're being vetted, that would be a good thing for everybody, and they could be well fed and the United States could provide for them. I don't like that notion, but I think it's far better than them coming to the U.S., being arrested, and then sent back to their home country where they're in greater danger than they were before.
And just before we move on from this, apart from migrants, we hear a lot about drugs, methamphetamine and the like crossing into the U.S. from Mexico. We've spoken on this before, but any more to add, Ed?
Well, I think the methamphetamine's actually going the other direction. The U.S. is a big exporter of methamphetamines. I don't think Mexico has to provide much there. But cocaine has become a drug of choice again because the price has gone down. So cocaine is coming to the United States. But is this really a problem of the drugs, or is it a problem of the malaise of the American people? People are taking drugs to get away from something, and the something has to be the fact that there's job instability, that they lack a sense of belonging, that there's racial and other kinds of friction. And so when you're hopeless, a drug is a cure-all. So the drug problem is not a smuggling problem. The drug problem is a human dilemma.
Still in Mexico, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, we're not talking Trump, but he has been compared to Trump. He rode into office on populist support, promising to drain El Pantano, but some say shows an increasing authoritarian streak and can't help himself when going after anybody he sees as a political enemy. Any thoughts?
Well, we've seen this in the Philippines, haven't we? This is not a new thing. And Trump helps because he's behaving the same way. So he's condoning this. In Mexico, this actually goes down pretty well. People want a very strong president. The country has a very weak, complicated legislature that does almost nothing because that's the way the Constitution made it up. And if you don't have a strong president, you don't get much done. The strong presidents in the past, though, have done a lot of social justice things. And this president stuck with a weak economy and a lot of drugs and corrupt cops. So his strength is working in that space. But my gosh, we don't need another Trump.
Was thinking of moving gradually southward on this one, but really for the region right now, we've got to talk Venezuela. The crisis worsening with Venezuela's Supreme Court accusing four members of parliament of treason and conspiracy for supporting opposition leader Juan Guaido. What's the latest, Ed?
Well, This is escalating, and it's escalating in the wrong direction. If Juan Guaido goes down, the country goes up in smoke. I think we all know that, and they are moving perilously close to that day. I thought there'd be some form of intervention here from nearby countries. It has not yet eventuated, but something has to give, and it has to give soon. We'll have another Syria on our hands if this doesn't change soon.
Well, just speaking of intervention, the US and more than 50 other countries say Guaido is the legitimate leader of Venezuela right now. But look, if we were to understand this in the context of the region, Maduro took over from Hugo Chavez. It's a famously socialist country. United States, South America, socialism. As we mentioned the other week, America doesn't have the best track record to be making many statements in this area.
No, it doesn't. But the United States here is in a different position. It's not socialism they're fighting. It's a different kind of authoritarianism. And the fact that this man is from the left doesn't stop him from being an authoritarian and a thug among his own people. He could be in Damascus, and you could say the same thing. When you take off after your own people and challenge the democratic institutions, that's bad for everybody. So Maduro should legitimately call elections. If you want to fight this fight, do it with an election battle. He won't do that because he'll lose. So the United States ought to be insisting on policies that bring the people back into the action, bring the people there in the ballot box, not more guns.
And just before we move on, even before the latest crisis of leadership, Venezuela was in an economic depression, widespread shortages, people fleeing the country, as we sort of, you know, touched on in terms of the movements we see in South and Central America right now. Where does it go even under Maduro or Guaido?
Well, if Guaido comes in, there'll be a relief valve. You'll see ships lining up, cargoes coming in, things coming in from Brazil, things coming in from Ecuador. They are already poised to do that, and from Colombia. The question is, if you bring them in now, you stabilize Maduro. So I think we are probably weeks away from some major breakthrough here, and I hope it's one where the troops are actually escorting people in who have food and supplies. This country cannot last the way it is. It is on its knees.
Speaking of a relief valve, rather appropriate, Cuba have gotten themselves involved in the Venezuela mess as well as a key ally and are looking down the barrel of harsh U.S. sanctions as a result. What's the latest?
Well, the question here is, how much harsher can the sanctions be? Right now, any sanctions hurt Americans. American tours operators, Americans are exporting all kinds of goods and services to Cuba. One of the few places that can use American automobiles are the Cubans. So when you start thinking about who this hurts, again, it's like the trade war, this hurts Americans. The Cubans are accustomed to not having very much, but the Americans are growing rich on that trade with Cuba. The Cubans aren't getting much richer, but Americans are. So this is one of these delicate balancing acts, and I think we're going to see this. First, the Cubans and the Americans will make some accord about how to treat Venezuela. And the next thing we'll see is the Cubans doing something they can do, and that is take in Venezuelans seeking refuge. And that will create a relief valve, and that should happen pretty soon, if it's going to happen at all.
I feel like I haven't heard a lot from Cuba, really, since Barack Obama visited the country in the last year of his presidency. Over half a century of hostility, we saw the Cuban thaw under Obama. But how has the country actually been doing since then?
Well, the country's divided internally. The old hard-nosed Marxists are still there. They are part of the Cuban dynasty of revolution, and they still are part of the military, and they want to play hardball. Hardball helps them in a couple of ways. It provides enormous opportunities for corruption, particularly smuggling. And that group doesn't want the United States really to do business with Cuba. Then you have this younger group of Cubans, many of whom have been to the United States, have family members in the United States, who want to be united with the United States, but not with the United States we are thinking about. They want to be united with kind of a right-wing, anti-Castro United States. And so we see in Florida the remarkable thing where Hispanics are voting for Trump. And they're voting for Trump in the hope that he will invade Cuba. So the tug of war in Cuba is the same as the tug of war in Venezuela. And the United States is facing some of the same dilemmas, except the Cubans in the United States have a great deal to lose. They're the ones who are making the most money with this trade deal now. And we're going to see more Cuban activity, more Cuban movement, more younger Cubans starting businesses, building relationships with the United States. Senator Scott, the recently elected Republican, is very Cuban-oriented. So I think the Cuba-Florida ties are going to increase, and Cuba's going to fade into the background for the United States, but increase in Florida.
Moving southward, Brazil took a pretty severe right turn in its politics with the election of Jair Bolsonaro. Brazil before everything and God above all. Bolsonaro, another Trump-esque figure. In fact, he's been called the Trump of the tropics. Is it a fair comparison, Ed?
Yes, it is. And he has the same dilemma that Trump has. Being the president doesn't make you the king. And so he thought he could come in and pull off a revolution where the legislature would follow his path. They have not. They are still after a lot of social policies to give Brazilians more. The other very sad thing is he's unleashed these hard right-wing capitalists that are destroying the Amazon. Mm. As you know, I was there several months ago, and this is a critical issue for the entire world. So what he's trying to do is to get enough money to buy his way out, since he can't do things with his legislature, and the military is divided. They don't know whether to stick with this guy or stick with others. And they were divided in the election. They remain divided. So like Trump, he's under investigation. He's got his back to the wall, but he's fighting with jingoism. And the fight is now, we have to be strong Brazilians against Argentina and all these other bad guys who are going to take our democracy away when he's the one that's doing it.
I did want to underline that Amazon issue because, as you say, it's a key policy for Bolsonaro, opening up the region for more economic purposes. But it is a worldwide issue. It contains 10% of the world's fresh water, produces 20% of the world's oxygen, and is a massive carbon sink. So big implications for climate change and
for the entire world. This is an issue for all of us. The United States will not be party to this, sad to say, even under another president. The United States is taking the position that the Brazilians can and will work this out, particularly when you actually have a strong Brazilian legislature that has the capacity, as they did with the previous president, of throwing them out. So I think, and thank God the military, unlike Venezuela, has not sided entirely with this new guy.
And just in terms of economy and U.S. ties, Trump and Brazil have been looking to reestablish those economic ties after two decades of leftist rule. These are the two biggest economies of the Western Hemisphere. There's got to be some good news for both countries in that.
There is. Brazil makes very good aircraft. They are making substitutes for sugar. They are producing. The problem they have is, beyond the initial stages of production, that is the infrastructure to move goods from ports to other countries, it's in very bad shape because it hasn't been taken care of. And the corruption has been so bad in that arena that they're not getting the most, the biggest bang they can for that buck. Furthermore, Brazil has a growing population, young population, that does not have the skills even to go into these factories. And the rest of its infrastructure is crumbling. What Brazil needs is a big new deal. Finance primarily from what other countries will do, give it to save the Amazon. They need fresh money, and that's where it can, some of it can come from. But Brazil has a lot of resources. They export I think they're third in the export of coal to China. They export gold. They export a lot of commodities. And coffee especially, which I had some this morning, comes from Brazil. So Brazil is a country that can fend for itself. It is just hopelessly and helplessly tied up in its own internal problems, much like some European nations.
Compared to all this, Bolivia under Evo Morales seems to be doing incredibly well for its people with its turn to the left. If I were to say, let's go someplace like Bolivia, maybe we should go someplace like Bolivia.
The reason for that is Bolivia is out of the news and it's out of the way and nobody needs anything from it. Its copper and other supplies are being protected by U.S. and Australian interest, and it's living under its own monetary policies that are very stiff, under control. It's created safe passage for some of these drug lords so they don't invade the entire country. Bolivia is the Switzerland of South America.
Argentina, they're looking ahead to presidential elections in October, and things are a bit shaky for incumbent Mauricio Macri. He's the moderate populist Peronists, as far as I can read into it, posing a big threat to his re-election. What's going on, Ed?
Well, the issue there is, what Peronists do you want? You want the left side Peronists or you want the right side Peronists? You're going to get a Peronist. Peron is still popular there, and that is a populist democracy where you keep the unions under control and allow capital to do some of the things it needs to do. Fortunately, they have their population under control. Their commodities are under control. They are just not really a modern economy yet. You can't just sell coal and cattle to the world. And that's their biggest problem, modernization. But I think they are in a very good position to weather this storm. And as long as Brazil doesn't fall on them, as they might.
Argentina's biggest union, though, has called for a strike against the Macri government. This is after Macri was forced to go to the International Monetary Fund for a record $56 billion bailout. So they are seeing this rather terrible recession.
What this recession is caused by what I just said, that commodity prices are going down everywhere, here in Australia, everywhere. And if your country only has commodities and it has no finished products, and tourism is not as big as it could be because the infrastructure isn't there, so they don't have a way out. They can't look to a new, young, vital population that's going to make new products, goods, or services. They are not the electronics giants. They're not like Brazil that can make new sugars, make new aircraft, and so forth, or Venezuela that has all this oil and related products that it can get out. So they have a very fragile economy. And what they've been able to do in the past is use enough of that wealth to keep their population well fed, but not getting rich, unfortunately. And now they're stuck because that population is getting skinny. They are not able to export what they could, and it doesn't look like there's going to be any kind of products, goods, or services that they'll have in the future. They may be a lesson for Australia.
Just before I let you go, I know it's the Caribbean, not Central America, but generally south of the border. Puerto Rico, in terms of recovery, how is it looking?
Say Puerto Rico. I just saw West Side Story. And the Puerto Rican story is so intimately tied with New York. Puerto Rico is scarcely recovered. Things are very bad there, worse than they were when I was in Katrina. 3 years out, we were pretty much dry. The city was rebuilding. Puerto Rico is in any place near there. And if it weren't for New York and the fact that Puerto Ricans are American citizens, we'd hear a lot more about this. But I think rebuilding Puerto Rico is going to be a very long, hard job because of climate change. There are going to be more hurricanes coming at them, and they haven't built much in the way of redundant infrastructures that would withstand those hurricanes. And they've given away most of the island to petrochemical companies, to pharmaceuticals, companies that are just raping the environment. So even if things get good, they are still bad in Puerto Rico.
Trump has claimed repeatedly that he gave in Puerto Rico $91 billion in relief funds since 2017. The administration's actually allocated $42.3 billion, and now just this week, a new report maintains that the island has only received $12.6 billion total. There's some big gaps there, Ed, not pocket change.
Well, wasn't Trump's father born in Germany? So if you believe what Donald Trump says, you have a real credibility problem for yourself. No one's received $90 billion from the United States for anything in the Trump years. The military could struggle to save $90 billion. So I don't know why these exaggerations, they're not even necessary. Puerto Rico, unlike Argentina, does have some bones for recovery. Let's not leave Cuba and Puerto Rico out of this equation. Cuba and Puerto Rico could work together. They're very close to one another. The Cubans know a lot about disaster management. The Puerto Ricans have rum. The Cubans have cigars. You hear where I'm going? the combination here could be a tourism mecca. And I think there'd have to be a little gambling with that. But I think they have some chance. If they could get their house in order and have the kind of resilience necessary to withstand the next set of storms.
Mm. And just finally, any final thoughts on the Central South American region that we should be looking for next?
Well, I think we have some countries that are very near collapse, like Guatemala and Honduras. And this is a serious matter, because if those countries collapse, that's very bad for Colombia, it's very bad for Panama, and it's very bad for the United States. So let's see if we can prevent that by doing the right thing now. We really can't wait till 2020.
US of Ed is produced in the studios of 2SER in Sydney. Help support the work we do by going to 2SER.com/support. Ed and I'll be back to our regularly scheduled podcast next week. Catch us on iTunes, Wooshka, Facebook, and Twitter at US of Ed.